This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Known and Ever podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and this week I am joined by the newly rejuvenated panellist, Robbie Coppack, who's back again, like buses, it's very exciting, and panellist Tom Whittaker. We look back at that result against Chelsea, and we look forward a little bit as to exactly where we are this season. So without further ado, let's go. Known and Ever podcast! Robbie, you're spoiling me. 2 weeks, two appearances. I love it. Welcome back again.
I've got quite a lot to say. I don't know why. I think we've all got an opinion on where we're at the moment, and I think we all want to.
Everyone wants to jump
grieve
on.
And yeah, we all want to grieve and rant and get it off our chest.
I've always found over the many years that we've done the podcast that listener numbers can either be, they'll spike either when we're doing phenomenally well. So obviously in the lead up to the championship last season, numbers were sky high, or when we're doing really, really badly. There's almost like a need for therapy between us that we all jump on. Well, we've come on this evening because we've obviously had an international break. We were a little bit down in the dumps post the Chelsea game. It was a difficult afternoon for many reasons. So we wanted to have a little break as a team. We talked about it. And we didn't know whether or not we were able to put out something that was worthwhile. And I think a lot of our listeners and ourselves included were a little bit jaded with having to analyse another heavy defeat against one of the bigger teams in the division. We were very mindful that it would just come across as a little bit whining, a bit doom and gloom. So we decided to regroup. We've talked a lot between us about the kind of position we think we're in as a club, where we all are as fans, and the kind of material we wanted to put out there. So Robbie and I are going to have a little bit of an assessment of where we are. Tom's going to come in shortly. He recorded us a piece directly after that Chelsea result. So we might need to look at that with a little bit of a timestamp on it, because it wasn't in the immediate aftermath of the game. But it's good to look back on that and feel how we'd felt, particularly about the mental side of our game. I think that's quite an important one that we want to address. But we're going to look forward, because this is, of course, our opportunity to get into that spell of fixtures which we've been looking forward to, and they're the ones that are perhaps more winnable. So, Robbie, I'm going to give you the floor to start off with, because you've got quite... you've been listening to some other material and you've got quite a few points on, and please do credit those, the material that you're going to talk from as well, because we do like to credit here on the Known and Ever podcast. I guess, take the floor. Where are we? How are you feeling? What's your general views right now? Let's see where we're at.
I think there's definitely a cause for concern. I think the results in isolation, they're probably spread out across the season, probably not unusual. Unnecessary pressure on games which we're sort of expected to compete in. Like the pressure going into the Luton game was ridiculous, considering it was only September. And it's sort of, you're getting that same feeling going into Brentford at the weekend. and you shouldn't be going into Brentford away needing to pick up a result. And I think that's where the concern's coming from. I think the last time I was on, I sort of said that if we split the games in half, you know, the first three to the last three we played, there's definitely been some improvements. And I thought we were past this capitulation, heads gone stuff. If we had lost against Chelsea, let's hypothetically say we lose that game 2-1 after the penalty, and we sort of lose that game in the same manner we lost against United. We lose the game 2-1. I still think we go into Brentford with a little bit of optimism going into because of what happened again for the second or third time this season, because it was literally Spurs at home all over again.
Yeah.
Where as soon as the second one goes in, it's sort of like there's a brief reaction, but the heads are just completely gone. They don't know when to press. They're not pressing as a unit, and it's just like there's gaps everywhere. And Chelsea could have easily scored 5 or 6 on the day. So it's putting pressure on to Brentford. I think I'm sort of looking at our next three, so Brentford away, Bournemouth away, Palace at home. I think we need to pick up a minimum of 4 points.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I think
which we can.
Palace, we can do, but we have to beat Palace at home. I think
yes.
I think that's a non-negotiable that we have to beat Palace at home. It's not even just get a point. I think we have to win it just to get that psychological thing out of the way that we can win games at home.
Robin, can I put this to you then while we talk about this? How much of an impact has the really unfortunate fixture selection had on us? Because as you alluded to at the beginning of your piece, it's not unusual for us to lose against all five of those teams across the course of the season. And actually, was it from the BOL End? Is that who you said it was? From the from the BOL End podcast. Really great guys who they do a lot of really in-depth analysis with things like that. You think you said that they'd looked at this and they'd looked at previous results against those teams in previous seasons. And they're the same. And it's not unusual for us to lose to Chelsea, particularly at home. But that and lose 3-1, you know, or lose by a big margin. But the problem that we've got is that all of these games have all come at once and they've all come back to back. And it's just, is it not just a case of we've just been really unlucky with the fixtures?
The manner in which we're losing them, I think like I said, if we had lost that game against Chelsea 2-1, I won't be that fussed. It's sort of like, oh, well, I think Chelsea look very well coached, to be fair. They look an awful lot better side than where the table suggests.
That's true.
They played Fulham at Craven Cottage before they played us, and they looked an awful lot better than, again, what results suggested. So whether it's just taking them a little bit of time just to get going a little bit under Pochettino and stuff, and they probably played us at the right time as well, and it's like, right, okay, now they're on a roll. It's just the... We concede. I don't know what Burnley's going to show up. Because against Luton, it's like... Luton, and we responded straight away really well. And we responded pretty well when Forest equalised against us as well. But when the big hitters come, we seem to fold and capitulate and just don't seem to deal with it very well.
So this suggests that there is a mental challenge from the player's perspective. Do you think that's fair?
Again, the guys at the from the BOL End podcast, they were talking about this Burnley squad haven't really had much adversity.
No.
Like we've not really had to deal with, apart from Sheffield United, where again, that was another game where we seemed to capitulate, but we responded after that. I think we won like 10 on the bounce going straight after the World Cup. And something after listening to that, what I thought about is that apart from Rotherham at home, Reading at home, we didn't really have to come from behind too much.
No.
And I think when teams did take the lead against us, they just sort of sat back and tried to defend with what they had. As at this level, when teams go ahead, they are fucking relentless and they don't stop. Like we found out against Chelsea and Spurs, they just keep going and just relentless.
Yeah.
And whether it's just the mentality thing where we expect them to sit back a bit like what Man United did and let us have the ball and let us try and break them down. They don't. They just go, okay, we're going to go get three and four and five.
Yeah, they possibly kill the game off very quickly.
And possibly a six if we have time.
Yeah, we run out of time. But that is a concern, particularly from a Burnley fan perspective, because we've had a decade where a team that's mentally very strong and has a resilience against any level of adversity was our trademark. And that's something that we've been very well known for. And fine, I accept that the DNA of this side has now moved on. And as a club, we were a different generation of players, managers, coaching, and everything about us is different. But that we're still of that, you know, it's disappointing to be known as mentally weak in that perspective. And I've seen it myself. And there's a lot of things that I think impact on that. It's a very young side. They're a side, like you say, haven't been used to any level of adversity. They're playing in a league that's unfamiliar. But also as well, company isn't publicly anyway giving me any signs that he is giving that priority in terms of making them mentally resilient and tough to beat. It seems to me that from a coaching perspective, that how we deal with our in-game play is very much tactically with our feet and not necessarily with our attitude. So that's a massive culture shift for Burnley fans to have to get used to.
I think on the Dyche, we sort of got bored of it all. Mm. Like the last few months of like Dyche, we were dying for a bit of a revamp and a restructure. We wanted a project.
Yeah.
And this is what we've got now. And it's sort of like, we just have to sort of be careful of this is what we asked for. So we can't really mourn too much. But yeah, I think it's just literally what we've talked about before. It's just the manner of which we're losing games. It's just putting more and more pressure on these really, really young players. Yeah. And it's sort of puts question marks against our recruitment team, who have been really good up until our hit rate with our signing has been positive. Apart from maybe Dara O'Shea, I don't think there's many question marks about many of them.
We don't want to single him out, but we've got question marks.
I think my question mark is like, we brought him in. Improvements on like Luke McNally,
no,
who we sent out on loan to a Championship club, who wants to be fighting for the top six, and he was in the playoff final last season and stuff like that. It's sort of like, well, you might as well save 7 million quid. And you've got a lad who's 2 years younger on the books already.
Yeah,
like, I appreciate
give him the exposure and increase that value of him.
Yeah, I appreciate that Dara O'Shea's got, you know, 2-3 years of Premier League experience and international experience and stuff, so I can understand the logic, but it's not been a great start. And again, you sort of put question marks going, well, what's Luke McNally's role moving forward?
Yeah. No, I think that's a really fair comment. I think from my perspective, I'm not putting pressure on this team, and I'm not putting pressure on the manager either. And if we do go down this season, and let's be honest, the reality is that the three promoted sides probably will do. We're hoping to. I think a lot of the comments pre-season that Burnley would finish in the top half, I always thought were ambitious anyway, but it even looks that way now. I think if we do survive, we survive 17th, and that's great. That's absolutely brilliant. We don't need to be any higher up than that. But I think we keep hold of company. If that happens, we keep hold of this squad as much as we can, and we just keep trying again. What I want to see, though, is I don't want us to go down because of stupid mistakes. If we go down because technically we're not there yet, and it's going to take a couple of years for this team to gel and for this manager to learn. We've got a manager who's never played in the... Not managed the Premier League before, so he's learning as well. And I'm prepared to give them time as a project. But something like mental resilience, that's not a technical thing. That is an easy win. That is something that you can sort out in the changing room. So that's where I become disappointed and think, well, who's coaching that? Who's prioritizing that? Because that is something that you don't need to have a £50 million and an amazing left foot to be able to compete with. That's just sports psychology.
What else there is to say? It's sort of weird that we're in October. I feel a little bit demoralized. You know, I want to like talk about like my day going. It's like we all travel like a fair distance and stuff. Like, you know, Tom comes from like Derby way, and George, if he's traveling up from like Bristol or Bath or wherever he's at, and I come from like Stockport and stuff.
Yeah,
and
I'm it's from like, the coast, so we
yeah,
all,
yeah, it's like,
there's only,
you know.
I think there's only Adam and George and Charlotte. I keep calling her Georgia, I keep calling her sister. There's only Adam and Charlotte, I think, who are local.
Me, it takes me an hour to drive to Burnley on a match day. I had to fill my car up and 60 quid, and then you buy your food while you're there and stuff. I buy my dad's as well. That cost me like 20 quid. So I'm like nearly like, I'm 80 quid, £100 out of pocket. See us get spanked 4-1 again.
Oh,
I drive
dear,
home and it's like 7:30 when I got in. I was like, my Saturday's literally gone. Like, I've got nothing to show for this Saturday whatsoever. Thanks a lot, Burnley. Football's back.
Okay, listeners, I'm gonna caveat this by saying that of course that's what we all do, and of course we're gonna do it next weekend as well. But yeah, I do jest a little bit, but it's a really valid point. It's hard. It is hard when times are tough.
Don't say Abby as well. She did say, well, at least it's the international break next weekend. She knew.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I think my other half's very much the same. It's just like, is there an international break? Thank God for that, because then she's not going to sulk. But it is true. We do have a sulk. So, okay, we talked about the mental game. We talked about that. Before we move on to analyse a little bit of it, I'm going to take a quick break from you listening to me and Robbie, and I'm going to bring Tom in. Tom, we asked somebody who felt up to it, and Tom, bless him, was the only one who answered the call, because the rest of us were just like, whatever we publish is not printable, so I'm going to decline to. And Tom just recorded a very quick piece for us to give us some thoughts on his reaction to the game. So let's hand over to Tom for a short while.
Good evening, Tom here. Unfortunately, it's a bit of another blast of negativity after the Chelsea game. You'll have heard me rant about the Man United game. I was really unimpressed with that second half display in that game. And once again, company sort of sent us out in the second half to play a lot worse than the first half. Another worrying trend, you know, that Chelsea second half really, really, I think everyone's come off that feeling lower than a snake's belly, really. And I know that I was probably in the minority after the Man United game. I think people took positives from that. Especially from the first half performance, but it left me thinking we're in real trouble this season, and I've not really seen that much yet to change my mind since, particularly for my home form. Chelsea, like United, are not the team they were in recent years. It's easy to look at the fixtures and go, oh, Man United, Chelsea, you know, we can't expect anything from those games, but the way they're playing, the way they have played for, you know, a good year or so now, and the results they've had against other teams who are going to be down there, or certainly bottom half team of the season, it all tells you that we shouldn't be settling for 0 points, and particularly not in the manner that we got 0 points against Chelsea. The team selection, I think, was a bit strange. I think everyone thought that when it came out. Why the need to make so many changes, especially when we've got an international break coming up. It's not as if there's a midweek game next week or anything. You'd think we'd be used to playing Saturday, Tuesday after last season. The changes that were made, so I could kind of understand Vitinho for Conor Roberts, just because I don't think Roberts has been playing that well. He's maybe just trying to nullify Sterling's pace a little bit, but I think as we saw, it didn't work. I was surprised Vitinho got a new contract, because for me, I don't think he's shown that he's good enough to play in the Premier League, and he certainly didn't show anything on Saturday. Got absolutely roasted by Sterling. I don't think he got a lot of help from another slightly maybe surprise inclusion, Mike Trezor. I think in the first half, he did a bit of tracking back. He did a bit of defensive work. In the second half, he just completely toughed it off, walking up and down that right-hand side, not offering anything going forward, not offering anything defensively, constantly giving the ball away. So I do feel for Vitinho a bit in that sense that he was exposed. But, you know, there's no excuse for diving in and giving away the penalty the way he did. Odegaard was another surprise inclusion, although you'd have to say he justified his inclusion a little bit more than Trezor did. Took his goal really well, I thought. It's frustrating that, yet again, just like the United game, you know, we've got the fullback on toast there. Kukurea gets booked for a bad tackle, just as Dalot did, and then never got run out again the rest of the game, not causing him any problems, making it a nice, easy second half for him. He's not had a good time at Chelsea, and he's playing out of position him yet. We didn't exploit that situation at all, especially after he was on the yellow. So that was really frustrating. And then the other big kind of selection, I can understand, obviously, Bayer injured. That's why Del Coir played. Aldekiel coming off at half time. No, he was really poor for the goal. And I've seen people saying, oh, it's unlucky or whatever. It's not. It's just bad positioning. But did it warrant being hooked at half time? I'm not sure. I think we were quite solid in the first half. And I think we looked worse when O'Shea came on. You know, Del Coir isn't a great ball player. We miss Bayo when he's not there. And I think Aldekiel is probably the second best of the centre halves. So it seemed a bit of an odd one to take him off for O'Shea, who I think O'Shea would have been a good Sean Dyche defender, but he can't play. He can't play with the ball at his feet. So why we've brought him in, I don't know. And then it brings you back to the other kind of big selection question mark that's hanging over us at the minute, Muric or Trafford. You know, our whole man's apart been pretty much Trafford the whole way through so far this season. I mean, I didn't think there was any chance of him not playing with the money we spent on him, but I think that's the problem. I think if he'd have cost us 3 or 4 million, he'd be on the bench now because he's not as good as Muric, I'm sorry to say. I think a lot of people have said it reminds me of the Joe Hart-Tom Heaton debate, and I think for that, Tom Heaton was clearly a level above Joe Hart, and that's why it was a bit strange that it took so long to get him in the team. It wasn't particularly that Hart was playing badly, it's just that he wasn't as good. For me, there's not as much between Muric and Trafford, certainly in terms of the basics of goalkeeping, in terms of shot stopping. Although you have to say Trafford, can you think of many saves this season he's made where you thought that was really good, that saved as a goal there? Me, not really. He's made some saves, of course, but nothing that you wouldn't have expected him to make, I don't think. He's worse than Muric coming off his line. Muric was really bad, obviously, first half of last season, but he did improve a lot, I thought, second half. Trafford's just glued to his line. He's got no presence at all, and the balls are coming into the box, as we saw in the Luton game. And his passing, his range of passing is just nowhere near as good as Muric's. You know, he can pass it sort of 5 yards, but he takes so long to do it. He needs 2-3 touches, and it reminds me a bit of when Taylor played last year. It was, he just slowed the attack down because he wasn't up to speed with the passing football we were playing, and it's the same for Trafford at the minute. And when you've got a man who's got a range of passing like Muric sat on the bench, you know, the second half we were just penned in, we couldn't get out, and sometimes you just need a ball over the top. You know, we've got quick wingers, you've got Colioscia, you've got Odubert, people who can run onto these balls, and it's not being utilised. I don't understand why. Foster, I thought, even his back to goal game was really good. He held it up well. The amount of times you want to flick onto himself, so we can play that out ball, but I don't think Trafford can. So I think I'm on Team Muric now, and I think he's probably he's probably worth giving a go in these next couple of games and just see what kind of a difference, if any, it makes. Last point on the selection is just the wingers. Again, I mentioned it was strange that Trezor got the nod, and he certainly didn't justify the selection. Odubert did better, and I wasn't against dropping Colioscia. I think maybe just needs a bit of a rest. I'll just see what he's like coming off the bench as opposed to starting. But the two real omissions at the minute, Brun Larsen, you'd be fuming if you were him. You know, you come off the bench at Luton, you score that fantastic goal, makes such a big difference, and then you drop to the bench and you only get a cameo when the game's all over. It can't be good for morale, that, because you'd be thinking, what do I have to do to get a start? And strange one. And it's the same for Zorori, you know, one of our best players last season. Obviously, you got that daffer against Man City. You know, if his name was Kovacic, he could have done that twice and not got sent off. But since then, he just hasn't had a chance at all. You know, he gets 10 minutes here and there. He plays in that League Cup game and does really well, albeit against poor opposition. But I don't understand why he's not even on the bench. And company said, well, we've got a lot of players of a similar level. But they're certainly not all getting a similar level of game time. So there's a lot to address, I think. I think Company has really got to get up to speed. I think he is one of the problems right now. We know that the transfer window wasn't the best. I don't think there's a myriad of options that can come off the bench to really make the team better. So they've got to be coached better. The starting 11s have got to be better. The subs have got to be better. The shape's got to be better. God, a lot's got to be better. But we're hoping now a run of sort of three easier fixtures, easier. Bournemouth haven't had a good start. They're actually one of the few teams that are below us. Brentford aren't the team they were last season. They've only won one game, same as us. And Palace at home, I can really see Hodgson doing a number on Company, but they're a beatable side. So you'd like to say we'll get something from that game. You know, if we get 6-7... 9 points, you know, from the next three games, then things are looking very different. But it's quite hard to be cheerful right now with the amount of sort of glaring problems that there are within the team. Hopefully Natalie and Robbie will have some more cheery insights for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Poor Tom's down in the dumps at the moment. We need to drag him out of it. Tom's usually the eternal optimist, but he's not loving it, isn't Tom? We need to drag him out of this. One thing then that I want to talk about, and given our goal difference and the amount of goals we're shipping this season, I guess there's a couple of question marks. Firstly, like slightly more flippantly, but who the hell is coaching our defence? Because we've got a bit of a mess defensively at the moment. Again, in quite a shift as well, a culture shift from our previous regime that was very well known for being very, very well drilled defensively, unfortunately, at the expense of everything else. But I'm gonna have to raise it. And this isn't necessarily us talking, listeners, but I am seeing a relentless barrage of question marks over our keeper situation. So we have to address it because that's what our listeners are talking about. There are significant calls now and voices over social media declaring that it is time for Muric to be brought back in. And that, I think some of the comments, Robbie, have been that he was unfair to lose his position in the first place. He should have at least been given a chance to show what he can do before Trafford was brought in. And a lot of fans remain unconvinced yet that Trafford is the right man for the job at this moment in time. This is a real tough one because Muric is not perfect. And if we all remember the early part of last season in the Championship, there were a lot of calls for Muric to be dropped and Peacock Farrell to be brought in. So let's not completely wash over Muric's performances last season. There were a few conduct issues that we understand, behavioural patterns, and also a few Muric moments. I guess without wanting to throw you completely under the bus, Robbie, but where do you stand with that? What camp are you in?
I'm still on the side of Trafford. Okay. I understand the logic, and I understand the cause for Muric, because he was harsh on him because he did get better as the season went on. I think it's important to understand that pretty much all the goals we conceded, Trafford can do nothing about them.
Yeah.
This is a very, very similar situation to the 18-19 season when we had Joe Hart in net, where yes. Joe Hart, he had, again, all the goals he conceded, he could do very little about. I seem to remember the Palace game at Selhurst Park. We lost the game 2-0. If it wasn't for Joe Hart, it would have been like 5 or 6 fairly comfortably. So there were calls then very similar, sort of like, oh, we want Tom Heaton back in, and Sean Dyche sort of rolled the dice and he put Tom Heaton in for the West Ham game, and then I think we went 8 or 9 games undefeated after that, and ultimately it kept us up.
Yeah.
So whether company has to do something very similar where he's sort of chopped and changed his back four a few times, he's looked like he's found a stable midfield with Brownhill, Cullen and Burge. Again, rolls the dice and goes Muric just to give it a go. Let's just see what happens. Again, it might be the same old problems, you don't know, but it does remind me of that 18-19 season of like Hart and Heaton.
Yeah, good point. I mean, I think one of the problems that we face as well is that, you know, Trafford's pulled out some really great saves. He's pulled out some moments of real brilliance, which are showing what the scouting network saw in him in the first place, and why we've taken that money out for him. It's really difficult because I personally don't feel like he commands his area that well, but then Muric doesn't either. So I think for me, and this feels like a little bit of a lazy stereotype and a bit of a thing to say that, because I don't really know what else to say with it, because listen, I'm going to be honest with you listeners. I couldn't sit here now and tell you why specifically I'm not feeling Trafford and why I think Muric might be better. It's really difficult. It's a very close. It's like 50 and a half, 49 and a half. It's like, do you know what I mean? It's really very, very close. What I do miss is the distribution and the part that Muric has to play in keeping the possession football. We've not been able to keep possession a lot this season. Even against Luton, it didn't really go for us as much as we would have liked it to have done. And Muric is really key to that. He does distribute a lot better than Trafford does. Now, for that to work, we do need that partnership of Beyer and either Alderkeel or Ekdal in the centre half position, neither of which we've got at the moment because of injuries. But I do think there's an element of a settled back four as well that isn't quite working at the moment. We've had to chop and change a lot. I guess that's my final question to you then on the keeper situation, Robbie. Like, how impactful would Muric be able to be in a possession game in this league? Or because if he isn't, does it really matter?
The two very similar goalkeepers anyways. You know, it's the way we want to play. A ball-playing goalkeeper. You know, he pushed for Bruggen last summer.
Yeah.
Failed to get him. And then
Where did he go in the end?
He got at Brighton, hasn't he?
Ah, of course. Yeah.
But he's been playing really well for Brighton. So Brighton sort of Brighton chop and chase their goalkeeper. I think for Bruggen plays the home games and Jason Steele plays their away games.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's, again, I thought that Arsenal were going to do something similar with like Ramsdale and Rea, but doesn't appear to be the case. Now Obviously, yeah, Kompany wanted for Bruggen last summer. He went for him again this summer. So you obviously saw Muric as a short-term solution.
Yeah.
Obviously, again, with the fee we pay for Muric, it was only about £1 million, £2 million, yeah, something like that, which is pretty low money, in, even in this market now. And then we've gone out and, you know, broken our transfer record for Trafford, and we're prepared to do it for Bruggen as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, Muric is a number one. You know, we have to trust the company on that.
Yeah, it's really tough.
From what I've seen of Muric, it's a horrible sort of comparison, because what we've seen of Muric in the cup games against Forest, and he was really good at Salford. It's weird to come. It's not fair to say. Well, Muric was really good at Salford. Let's throw him in against Chelsea. It definitely will work. I think Muric has. To say it, Muric knows where he wants to play the pass. I think Muric is like a pass ahead, if that makes sense. I think when Trafford gets the ball, he wants to play a pass, but he's unsure on it.
Yeah, he's thinking and then, like, one step
ahead. I think he's like, I think he knows the pass. He looks up and that pass isn't on. It's gone straight away. And I think Muric already has like a plan B in his mind.
Yeah.
So I think he has a bit more certainty, whether it comes down to experience of playing at a higher level or something like that. I'm not sure, but yeah, I mean, it's company's call at the end of the day. I understand the logic of having the calls for Muric to start against Brentford, but I don't think it'll solve our problems.
No, I agree.
Hello, podcast listeners. We've got an extra little bit of content for you in this week's podcast from our very own George Poole. Now, as you know, George is chairman of the Claret's Trust. And recently, the Trust awarded a honorary membership to John Francis for his efforts for the club, youth coaching after retirement, and in particular, his response to racism away at Plymouth in the 1994 playoff campaign. George presented John with this honorary membership ahead of the Manchester United game at the Turf a couple of weeks back, and he sat down and chatted with John for a short while. And here is that conversation.
We're here with good John evening. Francis with the Clarets Trust and the No Name Ever podcast. It's our pleasure to be with you here tonight, head of the Man United fixture. So first things first, thank you for sitting down with us.
No problem whatsoever.
We're really looking forward to speaking to you and reflecting on your time at Burnley and also looking ahead to the game against Manchester United tonight. Mm-hmm. Which should be a cracker.
It should, yeah. I mean, it might be a good time to play Man United at the moment, obviously with the results going and them just playing in Europe as well. So it could be a good opportunity, hopefully, for Burnley to get the first win of the season.
Absolutely. But the first thing that came to my mind when we walked in is how much Turf Moor must have changed since you were a player.
Wow, massively changed. I mean, you know, there was a few bubbles on when we used to play. But also, you look at the stadium now, it's just phenomenal. What they've done with it is, it's second to none. And it's now up to a standard where, you say we are a top Premier League team.
Yeah.
Looking at the stands, I mean, it brings back memories having to run up and down the stands. the 12-minute runs we used to do and all sorts of things like that with the club.
Yeah, do you look sometimes with envy at what the players get nowadays?
Never with envy. I think end of the day, players will always get what they're worth.
And yeah.
I'd never begrudge a player getting what he can do in the game because it's a short living, so you get what you can out of it as such, you know.
Yeah.
Because when it does come to a point that when they're going to end playing,
yes.
You know, it's a toss up to say if they're going to get another career or not.
Yeah. Well, speaking of life after playing football, I suppose, yeah. you coach youth football in Yorkshire. I was speaking to Rob Porteous,
yeah,
and you coach his daughter,
his daughter actually.
Yeah.
Well, we set up about a year ago. I've been coaching since I stopped playing. So I was at Burnley with the academy for 6 years and also at Leeds United Academy for 7 years. Then done the scholarships and done the first teams for non-league teams up at Brighouse Town and things like that. But for the last year, I've been doing the scholarship over at St Mary's and Ilkley Town FC. And also, we set up a Wharfdale Grassroots Academy for the teams in and around the area, four teams over the Wharfdale district. So it's Ilkley, Burley, Geisley and Menston. And Rob's daughter plays for one of the teams. And we've done really well. We've been going a year. We've got over 300 kids in the setup. All age groups practically. We've got a couple we need to do this season. But, it's onwards and upwards at the moment. The scholarship's going really well. So we're just progressing as such with it. So it's going really well.
I was reading online that you've coached a few future England players in your time. Fabian Delph among them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was at Leeds and we had some good players. Lewis Cook's been there. Fabian Delph, James Taverney, to name a few others. Was at the club when Aaron were there, Aaron Lennon as well.
Oh, of course,
But Aaron was a young kid. So, some good players have come through. We had a good coaching group at Leeds.
Yeah.
And obviously, things move on and you move on. So, but we did have some real good footballers coming through.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, we've just passed the 20th anniversary, I believe, it's the 30th anniversary of the York, the night at York in 1992.
Yeah.
Obviously, so I'm only 23 myself.
Yeah.
So I wasn't there, but I've grown up watching the videos of that night at York. My dad was there that night.
Great memories.
Mayhem it looked in the away end. And we were just speaking before we met you tonight that there was even a fan who ran on the pitch and swam on a Lilo in the middle of the pitch.
That was the game before us. That was it? That was the Carlisle game.
We should have won.
Ended up drawing that game for Carlisle, and I probably scored probably the best goal of the season I've ever scored. We ended up winning at York, and it was fitting, obviously, with certain things that happened a few days before, and young Ben passing away, and we had to rearrange that game for the last game of the season, and we ended up winning it due to that. It was good memories.
Yeah,
good
memories. Of course, it wasn't your only promotion season at the club. Two years later, the run to Wembley.
Yes.
And I suppose as the trust we were going to, as part of honouring you tonight, we really wanted to reflect on the game at Plymouth. Obviously, that your response to the abuse you suffered that night was the most spectacular fashion and a really fantastic and emphatic response to what happened.
It was an emphatic response, but I would have been in trouble nowadays if I would have done anything like that now. So it's it's things have moved on. Things are more, you know, we've learned a little bit of from time gone on. And I don't think it gets ignored as much as it used to do, racism. And it's still there. It's still prevalent. Obviously, we've seen the situations with the England games and with the lads playing for England. You know, Saka's penalty miss, where he's being abused afterwards. But, yeah, it happened on that night where, you know, I was getting racial abuse from the crowd. Every time I got the ball, I was running down the line and could hear monkey chants coming. So when I scored, and it was probably, like I said, the wrong thing to do, I've turned and I've just wheeled and run down the crowd and said, the monkey's just scored against you. But yeah, it's one of them things. We did it, and like I said, I don't think I'd get away with it in this year's game.
Possibly. But a fantastic response, and wasn't your only fantastic celebration that night with the knobbly knees?
I don't know where that came from. I have no idea where
you say you didn't practice that in training?
It was sheer elation, I think that was it. It was just sheer elation. Hopefully, you know, seeing that, if we could see the game out, we've got a great chance. Because I don't think anybody gave us a chance to win that game. That was the thing. We went down there. They'd all booked the coaches for Wembley and everything, what I was hearing. And I think that's Jimmy Mullen just put the newspaper up saying, you know, their coaches are booked on the board in the changing rooms. And I think that was enough for the players to think, well, let's see how we go there.
Yeah.
You know, we had a great response. We had a good team at the time. And the likes of, you know, I get applauded for the goal, but we had some good players in that team. Adrian Heath playing and Ted McMahon. Warren Joyce was fantastic that night, you know. So, and it was fitting because we had some good footballers, but, you know, we could win games as well. And,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely. So, well, yeah. I'll just hand over to Andy and Simon for a couple of questions before we finish. That's okay.
Just got a couple of quick ones. Who were your roommate when you went to the Plymouth game?
Who was my roommate?
How were you feeling before that game?
I can't remember. It was probably, let me think. Who would it have been? I'm trying to think if Kurt Nogan was there, but I don't think Kurt was he? I don't think Kurt was there. It might have been Andy. It might have been one of the young lads, you know. It might have been Andy Farrell. Yeah.
Andy Farrell.
Yeah, it could have been Andy, something like that.
The man who played in every position.
Andy did, yeah. Good lad is Andy.
Nowadays, you were probably the fastest player that was in the 90s. If you had to have a race now between Colly or Short, Benson and yourself, who do you think can win?
The other day, how quick is he?
We were telling you, we had a race between all three.
Yes. It'd be interesting. I love to have seen it, but I mean, yeah, he looks rapid, doesn't he? Colly Osher. Yeah, he looks unbelievable. Like, you know, so nice to see they've got somebody with pace now. You know, that's a problem. Benson, very good player. Yeah. Love Benson. Yeah, come inside a lot, and you know, they played him on the right side, coming inside. Played on the left, coming inside on his right, and scoring goals. So, good player.
Yeah, remember you doing that on one game, coming over from left. Carlisle.
Northampton. Northampton. Yeah, Northampton. Yeah. So, those were the years. Yeah.
And we've just mentioned a few of the players who are active now in the Burnley side. How do you look at the side that we've got now? Obviously, it's a brand new system, a brand new style of play.
Obviously, I watched a couple of games last season.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's quite remarkable that the improvement, the team and what they've done, what Vincent had done for the last year, in that year he's come in. It's, you know, it's quite astounding. I don't think any manager would have ever done that. You know, but the way they're playing is completely different to where, you know, obviously where they played with Sean. But if you look at what Vincent's done, he's got players comfortable, brave, on the ball, you know, and a good winning element as well, you know, playing with a purpose.
So absolutely.
He's very good.
Yeah. And finally, a score prediction for tonight, will, John.
Come on, 2-1 will do me.
2-1, goal scorers.
Colly Osher's got to
if he can outrun John Francis, he's got to score against United.
One from Colly Osher, one from JP players. Yes. It'd be nice to see Jay score.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, John. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
And congratulations on
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, let's finish off, Robbie. 10 wins are going to be needed this season. We haven't got any bonus points off the five big teams that we played. I think we've got exactly the right amount of points that I was expecting at this point in the season, four. So I don't think we're behind in points. I do think United at home was a missed opportunity. I think we could have beat them because they were poor. And so we need to consider which teams this season we're going to get these bonus points from, and where we get those 10 wins from. So taking into account that the older teams like your Newcastles and your Villas are now really, really tough to beat and are going to be up there at the end of the season, what kind of teams are you expecting us to beat, and do you think we can get those 10 wins to survive?
I expect us to beat anyone, because you can look like an idiot afterwards, but I think, like I said it before, I think Bournemouth away is a must win now, or a must not lose at least. I think Palace at home is a must win, just because psychologically we need to get that first home win on the board. I'm trying to figure who we got after that. I'm trying to think if it's another winnable game after Palace.
That's a good point, actually. Just give me a second. I've tried not to look too far ahead for Burnley results. You carry on talking and I'll get you the fixtures.
Here we sort of identified when the fixtures come out, sort of going, right, let's get those tough games out of the way.
Yeah.
And then we're sort of like, right, let's use this period to actually see where we are. Because we've had the worst case scenario, we're all panicking and it's like, oh God, Brentford away. Oh God. Yeah, we have to get something at Brentford away. And it's like, Bournemouth away is a must win. And again, you sort of saw what Everton did to Bournemouth at Goodison. It's like, they're not very good then.
So the next
they'll probably look at the same thing as us and go, they're not very good either.
Let's get them. So we've got the next six Premier League fixtures. We've got Brentford away, Bournemouth away, Palace at home, Arsenal away, and then West Ham at home and Sheffield United at home. So let's ignore that Arsenal one. But we have got five out of six very winnable games there. Brentford, Bournemouth, Palace, West Ham and Sheffield United. And then we play Wolves. Oh, and then we've got Brighton. And then we've got Everton. You know what? Right up to...
Period. Christmas.
This is a really important period. And you know what? By the time we get to Christmas, we could be looking at a completely different landscape here. It's very difficult. I understand why fans are feeling a bit down in the dumps after the start we've had. But my goodness, our season hasn't even really properly started yet.
We wanted to wait till we got to this period and then see where we are. And from the small sample size that we've seen at Forest away and Luton away, it has been fairly positive.
Yeah, it really has.
So, again, it's just, like I said before, if we lost the game against Chelsea 2-1, let's say we just had that mad 5 minutes in the second half, concede that penalty, lose to a penalty, and it's like, well, we lost to Chelsea through a fluky on goal, which 9 times out of 10 goes out for a corner.
Ew.
And a rash decision by Vitinho to hack down Sterling because he got the better of him.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. It's like, again, it's sort of like we've lost the game where we can really do. And it's like, capitulated after that moment. It's sort of like, it's all doom and gloom again. It's like, it's just Spurs and Villa all over again, where we just look very disjointed. We don't look anywhere near the side that we saw for certainly that second half of last season, where we absolutely steamrolled teams week in, week out.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. So, I thought that was red wine then, Robbie. I was like, my goodness, Robbie's really is getting very depressed. It's like Monday night drinking club. I was like, okay.
I could lie and say it's vodka, but it is only water.
It's like Monday night drinking club. Okay, well, let's leave it there. I think that is our thoughts of where we are right now. I think we have to now see where we are after the next six games. I think we'll wait and see what happens with the keeper situation. But hold your nerve, Clarets, because we've been here before and we only need to get to 17th. And even if we don't get to 17th and we go down again, we are building something really like key at Burnley. We've got a management and a coaching side that are impressive. We've got a really exciting young group of players who will learn and who will improve. So let's see where we get to. We're going to have a preview show and look ahead to Brentford this weekend, and then we'll come back to you after that and see where we are. Thank you, Robbie. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Charlotte. And yeah, we will check in with you next week. So stay strong, Clarets, and drop us a line. Let us know how you're feeling. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the Known and Never podcast. Until next time.
The Known and Never podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Our host and editor is Natalie Bromley, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Rich Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, and Adam Dennett. Our music is provided by George Gaskell, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonenever.substack.com. Thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are proud to be associated with the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.